All right, 10:06 here on 1490 WBCB and 107.3 FM. A new voice, so to speak, but a familiar voice here, Justice for All, will be a monthly show presented by Dion Square Merchants Shopping Center here on 1490 WBCB. And without further ado, an individual who has been on our airwaves and is back, D.A. Jen Shorn. Jen, thank you as always for making the time.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate you having me.
Well, I can't say I look forward to a lot of shows. This is good because for a variety of reasons. You know, being in the D.A.'s office, and I mentioned as well, we have a monthly show with Sheriff Fred Horan as well. It's important. I know it's important to you that business owners, residents, visitors here in Bucks County get to hear from the county offices. I know it was a big point of view, and we have some great topics today, and I just want to say I really appreciate your time and your office's time for making, you know, the monthly commitment here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, and thank you for having Lieutenant Chris Clark. We have an important topic, and I know you're going to segue into that, but we really appreciate this opportunity to kind of raise awareness in our community.
And awareness is a good word for this show, because there's a variety of things that individuals, young and old, you know, can. We have Mike Bannon on at the time about, you know, fraud alert and things of that nature. Today, a more, you know, sort of speak somber topic, but an important one as well. And you've called him a hero a couple times, and he doesn't like that tone. But I think it's a perfect adjective to describe Lieutenant Chris Clark here. And I know you have more to say about him, so go ahead, by all means.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm here with Lieutenant Chris Clark from the Falls Township Police Department. Chris and I have worked together on cases now for, we've just kind of done the math the other day, over 21 years.
Wow.
And yeah, it speaks volumes for, you know, how important those types of relationships are with law enforcement in my office and the district attorney's office, because, you know, we do great work together, but also, you know, sometimes you need someone with the expertise to really tackle the most challenging of cases. And today, our goal was to talk about two particular cases, but with a broad view of, reminding our community about awareness as it relates to child predators, individuals who prey upon our children for their own sexual gratification. So, it's really a pleasure to be here with Lieutenant Clark.
Well, Lieutenant Clark, I can't thank you enough for your time here today. You mentioned there were a couple cases that I know you wanted to touch on, and I mentioned the audience briefly. You know, it's a somber note. There's no easy way to talk about these things, but I think it's important for a variety of reasons to talk about them, because we can highlight, you know, ways to stay clear of these individuals, how to know how they exist, maybe some cue signs, all these things that I know D.A. Shorn and Lieutenant here have more, you know, expertise in. So, Jen, if you want to kind of get into that, by all means.
Yeah, and I'll turn it over for the specifics to Chris.
Yes.
But it was roughly 2003 when the Falls Township Police Department began an investigation into an individual by the name of John Sorber, who was a resident of Falls Township. He was an individual who was involved in all types of youth organizations, like bowling and, I believe, Big Brothers. And he was... initially, the investigation began because he was suspected of being in possession of child pornography. And it's funny now, even, you know, throughout my career, the evolution of, we no longer call it child pornography. We call it child sexual abuse materials, because it doesn't give the appropriate connotation. I mean, really what we're talking about when we're talking about child pornography is images and videos of children being raped.
Right.
And unimaginable, things you cannot unsee. So that's how the investigation began. I'll turn it over to Chris to give more details, but the takeaways from this case are still so pertinent today, 20 plus years later.
Agreed.
Exactly 22 years later, if I from the start of the investigation, and we'll talk about some of the evolution of child abuse crimes that we're seeing now. So I'll turn it over to Chris for some of the facts.
So, with respect to child predation and child molestation, there's essentially two different types of offenders. There's a preferential offender and a situational offender. This particular case involves a preferential offender, which is the most dangerous and has the most significant amount of victims. Just kind of speaking about child molestation generally, it was John Sorber's exclusive preference only to have sexual contact with children. And he, as we often talk about this case, just it's defined by his relentlessness, the obsession, his whole life life's mission was to engage or put himself in situations where he could groom the environment and groom children in such a way as he could have access to them sexually. Like, that was his life's pursuit, so to speak. So he moves into the township in about 2000, and the first report we get were from neighbors that were just kind of, you know, in their day-to-day life, witnessing this guy who was new to the neighborhood, who was single, and he was unattached, lived alone. John was a striking figure. He was 5'11 or 6 feet and about 400 pounds, so he was, you know, kind of stood out for a lot of reasons. They all took notice right away that he was kind of had an unusual amount of interest in the neighborhood children. The children would kind of congregate around his house. He would have them play with remote control cars in front of his house. He would trade Pokemon cards with them. So they called because they were concerned. And these types of things that I just described, they're odd, they're suspicious, they're perhaps concerning, but they're not criminal. So in as much as they reported this to us, this was something that we, you know, documented, we noted. We talked to neighbors, tried to see if there was anything more that we could do with it. But ultimately, it was just kind of on file, and this guy was, you know, on the radar, so to speak. So as time went by, the first, you know, true slip-up he did, and Jen spoke to this earlier about the kind of old school versus, you know, the kind of online predation of 2025. What people did back in the, you know, 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and even the 2000s is they would acquire child pornography or child erotica, again, the term kind of back then, through vendors overseas. So he procured a video called Chippin' Ditties, which was ostensibly a legitimate, you know, film made in England that depicted young boys who were basically in this dancing troupe, and they were dressing very scantily clad, and they were like showering together, these types, not fully, you know, nude, but they were just doing all these kind of engaged in all these types of behaviors that would be termed as child erotica, which is kind of that gray. It's legitimate, but it's used for illegitimate purposes. So in John's efforts to kind of hide his activity, what he would do, and this is not unique to John, this is kind of common with again that generation of you know, child predators, the preferential type, is they knew that they would get on more so on law enforcement's radar if they sent these materials to their houses. So what he would do is he would mail it to a neighbor within walking distance and then try to intercept the mail before the neighbor got home and checked their mail.
Wow.
So in this particular occasion, he missed his timeline. This person opens the mail, sees it addressed to him, finds this very alarming, you know, not illegal, but, you know, concerning video. And that's in 2003. That's the second report that we receive.
So from that point, and I have a question maybe for both of you, both from the prosecution side and the protecting side. You mentioned it's hard without that evidence prior. I'm sure you get both offices a ton of phone calls or alerts or suspicious activity. How hard is it for you, and I'll start with you, you know, D.A. Shorn, to take every threat, or how do you vet them to know which ones could just, you know, just not be as serious as others, and some are the John Henry Sorber cases?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, it's one of those things. Some of it is truly like that your instinct just reacts to the facts and knows there's more to this, that this is just the surface level. And it takes really skilled investigators like Lieutenant Clark and others in this county who realize this is, you know, classic grooming. And classic grooming now coupled with this child erotica, you know, there's enough flags here that then what is really amazing to witness is the creative ways that the investigation unfolds when you have those flags. I mean, you can't morally just, you know, turn a blind eye because we don't have concrete evidence that
right.
a crime occurred. So, you know, in theory, you can, and some do, but I can tell you right now, not Lieutenant Clark.
Right.
And there are others like him that just, you know, it's their goal to know that we have to be proactive. And so the investigation, there were some really interesting investigative steps that took place following that. That'll kind of answer some of the questions.
Yeah, I'd love to hear some, Lieutenant, because you mentioned, like, you start to finish. It's hard, you know, suspicious activity to concrete evidence. You know, how do we get to that point where we have to start putting some resources into, you know, investigating this individual?
So in this particular case, our break was, you know, John, we assumed or presumed that he was, you know, acting out or trying to procure children or trying to have this access to children. And it was only until he ended up kind of offending that we had our break in the case, and we had an opportunity to speak with the person that he offended against, get a statement from him, use that and all of our kind of historical expertise and our our knowledge of child molesters and pedophiles to walk ourselves into a search warrant to search his trailer. So what he was doing is, innocently enough, a young boy in the neighborhood posted a community notification on a bulletin board, 2003, that he would be, willing to cut people's grass for, an amount of money.
Sure.
So obviously, like I said earlier, and Jen kind of highlighted all the different things that he did, big brothers, big sisters, bowling leagues. He put himself in positions where he could have, as an authority figure sometimes, but just otherwise unfettered access to children. So, of course, it wasn't so much about his grass being high. It was about, here's a kid who's looking for, a way to have some type of relationship. So he took up this young boy's request and had him over and used that as the beginning of forming a relationship with this child. Along the lines of traditional grooming, he spoke to this child about, what his interests were, and he found out, rather quickly that the child was interested in WWE wrestling. So that became a mainstay of their relationship and their conversation. So he would make, John would make VHS tapes, again, 2003, for this boy. He would begin to order pay-per-view, matches that invite the boy to watch. So it's just he found an angle, saw an angle, and exploited it to have this boy come over. And ultimately, he needed, just like all, of these offenders need, they need an angle, because that's a very important aspect of grooming, is legitimizing adult child sexual contact. You have to break down boundaries. Like I said, you have to groom the environment. You have to normalize this. You have to break down those boundaries. And oftentimes it does take time to do that. So every one of these offenders, they're not reinventing their own way going about it. They all think they came up with it first, I'm sure, but essentially they all get there, their unique path. His path was something called product testing. So what he would do is he would reach out to companies, back in the day, and they would mail him something, and he would product test, write a review, and they would write him a very nominal check. So he used this scheme to introduce to this boy about product testing and said, hey, I do this, you could do this too and really make some money. One of the things I think that you should product test is a rectal thermometer. So he tried to legitimize this conduct, this contact through, it's a product testing, it's a legitimate, right, thing. He also kind of upped the ante by saying teenagers in particular, because of their body chemistry or their, development in terms of adolescence, they're the perfect person to, to be able to product test this rectal thermometer. So, again, considering this boy who's 12, 13 at the time, and this imposing 50-year-old man, yeah, who's 400 pounds and 6 feet, has him kind of confined in this trailer and is walking him through this scheme, the boy, I'm sure, knew something was wrong, but was intimidated, so much so not to be able to get up and just walk away or really argue against it. So the conduct escalated where John essentially tried, the boy was reluctant to use the rectal thermometer, so John kind of switched on the fly and said, how about a massager? So this is something else on product testing. So he takes this massager, he shows these attachments, he starts massaging the boy's back, starts pulling up the boy's shirt, tells the boy to take off his pants, and at that point the boy had, God bless him, the wherewithal to know, like, yeah, this is, something's going on, I gotta get up out of here before something terrible happens. He escapes, goes home, tells his mother that they call, the police and child services, and that's our first break.
Well, I'd love to take a quick break, Jen, if it's okay with you,
yeah,
and then come
absolutely
back and kind of talk about this case from now, the point where, mm-hmm, Lieutenant Chris Clark has enough evidence now to where we start thinking about the prosecution element. I'd love to kind of
absolutely
talk about how that started. So, once again, you listen to Justice for All here on 1490 WBCB and 107.3 FM, a monthly show from the DA's office to you, the individual listening here across Bucks County on 1490 WBCB. We'll step aside, take a short break, and come right back.
Head out to Dion Square, located at South Oxford Valley and South Olds Boulevard, to get all your essentials in one place with the following businesses ready to serve you: Pat Dion Beverages, CVS Pharmacy, Hair Cuttery, Smile Culture Dental, Biomat, Liberty Auto Tags, Pennsylvania Fine Wine and Spirits, Lee's Hoagie House, R&J Smoothies and Juices, AutoZone, and First National Bank and Trust of Newtown. Make Dion Square your one stop for all your shopping needs at South Oxford Valley Valley Road and South Olds Boulevard in Fairless Hills.
Mama, what does the chicken say? Dog. Cat. Giraffe.
Giraffe, really?
Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Album Sides is back on BCB. Join us weekday mornings at 11 for Album Sides. We've got great music. Gonna spin some of the best albums of all time. It's Album Sides with yours truly, the philosopher Chris Ermer. Weekday mornings at 11 right here on 107.3 FM and 1490 WBCB. You can also listen live at WBCB1490.com.
Back here once again on 1490 WBCB and 107.3 FM. Our new show, once again, Justice for All with Bucks County DA Jen Shorn. Great guest this month is Lieutenant Chris Clark from Falls Township. 28 years he has been there, he told us prior to the show, Jen, and we appreciate all of his efforts. Talking about a really notable case back in 2003, we mentioned nowadays how important it is. And Jim, I want to get back to the case, but before you mention the show, we mentioned, child predators, molesters, individuals who are prying on our youth is so important. And you had a great stat, and I want to get back to the case right after that. But you had a great stat from your office. And I know this works with the police departments across the county, how important it is. You were leading the way in an important statistic. I want to make sure that the audience was aware of that.
Yeah, so one of the things I committed to when I became district attorney in 2024, having served as, from assistant district attorney to first assistant for 25 years, I wanted to commit resources to continuing efforts to identify child predators. And the evolution is now the vast majority of our tips are cyber tips.
Right.
And we knew we needed to have a force multiplier. I needed to dedicate resources from my office to help partner with the local municipal police departments who were working on these tips. And as a result, I was so happy to hear that Bucks County is leading the state in arrests and prosecutions.
Wow.
Of individuals who commit these crime, sexual abuse of children, more so than the County of Philadelphia, City of Philadelphia, County of Allegheny, which includes Pittsburgh and 100 different police departments. And it doesn't mean we have a disproportionate number of child abusers in Bucks. It means that law enforcement is identifying them. They're working those tips, identifying them, and we're successfully prosecuting them. And I'm so proud about that. That's the only way you can combat these predators. You need the force multiplier, 100% buy-in.
Well, and we go back now to the case with, John Henry Sorber and Lieutenant Clark, and we kind of just segues right into that. So we're at the point now where it's very evident this individual probably is doing something illegal, and we get to that arrest point. How important now, Jen, is your office working together with Lieutenant and Falls Township and their office?
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting, Matt, in that this case, thankfully, on its surface, we have seen worse hands-on offenses unfold, but certainly this child was victimized, but to Lieutenant Clark's point, he had the wherewithal to try to get out of the situation despite the overwhelming pressure. The evidence that was uncovered as a result of the search warrant of the home and as a result of, the strength of this child coming forward to disclose his abuse was overwhelming in that there was, I think, in excess of 5,000 images of child pornography. There was evidence that this particular predator had a very specific type of his intent was to sexually abuse young boys, as mentioned, with a very specific means. And I won't get into great detail, but it was a theme that was ever consistent and consistent with what our victim endured. Scary was the fact that there was a list of boys' first names, roughly 10, I believe, and a third of them had checks next to their names, yet we were only able to identify one.
Wow.
Of the victims. So we knew we were just scratching the surface. But nonetheless, sometimes that's how your cases present, despite your efforts, because that's how good the grooming tactics are to silence victims. So we went forward with the charges, the possession of child pornography, and with the charges against this particular victim. Unfortunately, it's not uncommon, the victim was apprehensive, especially young male victims tend to be. And so the case got delayed, and we needed to move the case up to the Court of Common Pleas. During that time, this defendant's bail was reduced through no efforts of ours. I mean, we obviously strongly objected.
Sure.
And he got out. He was in the community pending prosecution for this case, and my office received a call, and I'll give a shout out to our former Attorney General Michelle Henry, my dear friend and colleague at the time, got a call from a woman in Arizona saying, I need to speak to the prosecutor assigned to John Henry Sorber. I believe my brother's not being truthful. I live in Arizona, but I read online the local media from Bucks County because I'm a Bucks County, you know, I was raised in Bucks County, and which is kind of cool to think in 2004,
yeah,
that's what this woman was doing to stay in touch with her roots. And she saw that her brother was not being honest about what criminal charges he was facing. And she had information that she knew that he was living with a woman out in Chester County who had a little boy. And it pained her. And so she did the right thing. She called our office despite, you know, implicating her brother. And what is remarkable, I'll never forget, it was a Friday afternoon. Hard to find a judge on a Friday afternoon. That's not a slight to the judge. It's just the way the court system works.
Yeah.
And we knew we needed to gather this information. If, in fact, he's in violation of bail, we needed an emergency revocation of bail. And so here's Lieutenant Chris Clark at the time, Detective Chris Clark from Falls Township. And he is absolutely committed to going to this location in Chester County in Willistown Township. Sorry, Chris. Thank you.
Wow.
And to see if the information's accurate. And what was when he called me to say, I'm here, and it was a school day, and I'm speaking to neighbors, and there are a number of neighbors that it's like an old house that was broken up into apartments, and it's clear that there's children's toys here, and it's clear in speaking to the neighbors that there is a woman and her 10-year-old little son who lives here, and I'll try to not mention names, and that, yes, recently she has a new roommate that moved in, like a grandfatherly type figure who moved in living with them, and that the little boy goes to school, and that his bus drops him off right here roughly around 3-something in the afternoon. And so we knew at that point we had him clearly in violation of his terms of bail. So as I'm working to get an emergency revocation of bail ordered, Lieutenant Chris Clark is waiting to confirm, you know, about this little boy. And I'll try to refrain from mentioning his name, but I'll let Chris kind of take over from there.
So we at that time, we just had our expectation was, or our belief was, that he was just cohabitating with the boy and having access to the boy, but we had no idea the level of access that ultimately he ended up having or had having, so much so that on regular occasions recently he'd been babysitting the boy overnight, and then just by happenstance that Friday, the day we went out there to corroborate this, it just so happens that his mother, who was totally unaware of John's past and present, so to speak, allowed John to take her son to Gettysburg for an overnight stay, ostensibly to explore the battlefields and have like a vacation. So as we arrived, they were actually in the car, either on their way or already at Gettysburg for this weekend overnight stay. And the mother had no idea that her son was in the company of this incredibly dangerous, highly motivated offender.
Wow. And thank God she had the hotel confirmation from the Hilton Garden Inn. I mean, this case is over 20 years old, and we both remembered that, like that.
Yeah.
The confirmation where the hotel was, and Lieutenant Clark at the time, you know, it's pretty, you know, I would say extraordinary in that, you know, obviously you contact the local police authorities that cover that Adams County, that section of Gettysburg, and that was Pennsylvania State Police to assist. But, you know, having someone who had the foundational knowledge of the case, it was important for Chris to be there. And he said, do you want me to go to Adams County, to Gettysburg, to follow up with this? And I said, yes, absolutely. And he went from Bucks County to Adams County. And upon arriving at the hotel, thankfully, we learned that John Sorber had checked in with the little boy, but they had left the hotel, and the state police identified them at an IHOP, I believe it was, yes, across the street, having a meal. And so what we learned, and I still, it's so chilling, is that they checked in, all their, you know, bags and things were in the hotel room, went to go get a meal, and we promised the young child that he would walk the battlefields the next day. But in the hotel room was all of the things that John Sorber intended to use to rape that little boy that night, including, you know, rectal thermometers, enemas, all of the things that we knew he would get sexual gratification, yeah, from, given, you know, his sexual predilection. But also he created fictitious emails and in this scheme to convince this child that what he was doing would be legitimate under the guise of either product testing or an opportunity to earn money was so elaborate. He had been sending this child emails from his fictitious grandson telling him it's cool to let Pops do this. If he spanks you, you'll get $2. If he does this, you'll get $3. And it was increasingly more money for, you know, more intrusive violation. And so without a doubt, that child that night was going to be raped. And he was spared, thankfully. We know that there was some victimization that was occurring leading up to that night, but nothing that even resonated with a child. He thought, oh, yeah, Pops would spank me on the butt and give me a dollar. You know, he did not even know he was being victimized. And, you know, it just goes to show what started out as really on this, in my world, a lower level. And I don't mean to suggest this is not so serious, but, you know, you had a crime that was not, you know, you had certain crimes committed, but not, right, the worst crimes. And we know without a doubt this individual was unrelenting in his pursuit of children. Did you want to add anything else to that?
No, I think the biggest takeaway from this looking back was I underappreciated or underestimated the impact of the psychosexual drive. So John Sorber was impotent because of his obesity and some other medical issues. He was aroused more. So most child molesters, grooming is a means to an end. It's not that they necessarily are aroused by grooming. Grooming is just, you know, a way to get to the end, the finish line, so to speak. With John, he was aroused by this fictitious grandson. John would, we've come to learn, would go onto online communities where people would have that. This was back in the day of AOL and online forums, right? So John would go onto these online communities where people, they would set topics, and the topic was just, you know, parenting or dealing with kids. He would have these fictitious grandsons or grandchildren, which was him, communicate with these people in these online communities complaining about the physical discipline that John was doing. This one woman almost had a nervous breakdown because she was so upset when she finally learned that, you know, all these years she'd been talking to these children and he describing these acts that were never occurring. So it was just this fictionalized, psychosexualized engagement that was just incredibly, you know, a driving part of his, yeah, his offending.
You know, it's for someone like you, Lieutenant, where, you know, this happens in your township. You know, there's no blood relation to this individual that's being, you know, groomed in this sense, and as well as UDA. How much, because every crime has its own sort of nerve ending that it hits you. And DA Jen did a great, Shoren did a great job of kind of going from start to finish, like to drive an hour to Chester County and then towards Gettysburg. How much of a commitment do you feel like, you know, this isn't my child, but it's in my town. It's where my little league son or daughter may play. It's where we do dance. How much of a vested interest once this begins do you feel like you have, Lieutenant, and the UDA Shoren as well after?
Yeah. Do you want to answer first? It's personal. And yeah, the moment it no longer is the time for me to look for another job. If we can't view every child as worth saving and fighting for and making sure that no child endures what we've seen countless victims endure throughout our combined career, I mean, it's devastating. And it's oftentimes we've seen, and we may touch on another case or save it for another day, but we've seen catastrophic outcomes when, you know, these children become adults and the trauma is, you know, still there. And they're struggling either with substance abuse or, yeah, other, you know, suicidal ideations. And it is I mean, they're our children. They're the most vulnerable among us, and we have a duty, and it crosses every – I mean, I think everybody universally agrees, you know, we cannot abide by this type of crime. And it is unfortunate that there are predators living among us, and they are unrelenting in their pursuit of kids.
Lieutenant, by all means, if you want to interject on that as well. From start of this case, where it grew in your area, how involved did you become until you saw this individual behind bars, you know, for a large sector of time?
So I'll just echo what Jen said, but it's not so much, you know, I'd look at police work as just kind of a universal application. So it's not so much this community. It's just an opportunity to, you know, save a victim wherever that victim is, or hold an offender wherever that offender lives accountable. Because especially in this digital age, like the offenses that are, you know, you have people that are traveling to do these offenses. So it's not necessarily a community-based endeavor anymore. You have to take a more holistic approach to their, you know, victims and offenders. It's all kind of, you know, kind of transitional. But that said, the investment, once you get involved in this, it becomes a passion where you know, and it's a great honor to be able to be the one that this is either going to make or break, you know, rise or fall on my efforts. So it's something that certainly you stays with you, and it takes a toll, but it's you know, one of the greatest honors and one of the greatest parts of law enforcement, whether it's this particular case or someone that's the victim of any other type of major, you know, serious crime, whether it's murder. That's your burden to bear, and it takes its toll, but it's one of the most, if not the most honorable things that this profession affords you.
I'd love to take our last break and come back. You mentioned this case was about, you know, 15 to 20 some odd, you know, years old. I'd love from both parties' perspective, you know, new things now to look out for, things that you've seen, Lieutenant and DA Shorn, things that you may come across your office to where, you know, this case is 20 years old and here are some new tactics or things that individuals like Mr. Sorber are doing. So we'll step aside, take a short break, come back with some more here. You're listening to Justice for All with DA Jen Shorn and Lieutenant Chris Clark here from Falls Township.
Head out to Dion Square, located at South Oxford Valley and South Olds Boulevard, to get all your essentials in one place with the following businesses ready to serve you. Pat Dion Beverages, CVS Pharmacy, Hair Cuttery, Smile Culture Dental, Biomat, Liberty Auto Tags, Pennsylvania Fine Wine and Spirits, Lee's Hoagie House, R&J Smoothies and Juices, AutoZone, and First National Bank and Trust of Newtown. Make Dion Square your one stop for all your shopping needs at South Oxford Valley Road and South Olds Boulevard in Fairless Hills.
WBCV is now on your FM dial at 107.3, serving Bucks, Burlington, and Mercer counties since 1957. You can now listen to all your WBCV favorites crystal clear on 107.3 FM, a new age for WBCV on a new frequency, 107.3.
Hey, this is Jonesy. Kick off your Thursday and Friday evenings in style. Join me for an eclectic freeform mix of the hits and beyond. It's a happening, a musical journey. It's the Glenn Jones Radio Experience right here on 1490 WBCB and 107.3 FM, Thursday and Friday, 5 to 6 p.m., directly following the legendary Jerry Blavitt. Radio the way it ought to be.
Welcome back here to Justice for All here on 1490 WBCB and 107.3 FM. Bucks County's DA Jen Shorn is in studio, as she will be once a month here on our airwaves, to give you, the residents and business owners and individuals here, a closer look of kind of what goes behind the scenes here from the DA's office. Don't forget as well, we'll have a monthly show with Sheriff Fred Horan here monthly, and more to come here on our airways. We just wrapped up an interesting case that both of you were describing with Mr. Sorber and DA Jen. I don't know if you want to, DA, keep calling you DA
you're,
Jen.
You're absolutely
DA, sure.
Jen.
Fine. We talked about the point where you kind of have in your grasp. If you want to just quickly put a bow on it and go through the prosecution standpoint and then kind of pivot now to new age, you know, child predators, by all means.
Well, thanks to Chris's efforts, the evidence that was recovered and the strength of our victim, you know, and, you know, the entirety of what we identified, we ended up getting, we litigated suppression, but we ended up where they try to exclude the evidence, you know, claiming some sort of due process violation, but then ultimately got guilty pleas, and he served significant time in a state correctional facility and has subsequently passed away, never able to harm another child again. But there is no doubt in my mind his desire and willingness to harm another child would be ever present. So just to kind of put a bow on it, and the reason why I wanted to talk about this, and I know it's a heavy topic, is that, you know, we talk about the evolution of child abuse just in my lifetime and in my career in the past 25 years. When I was a kid, you know, I grew up with the Adam Walsh generation of stranger danger, and you were led to believe you're going to be abducted from the bus stop by a man in a white van. And when I became a prosecutor in 1999, you know, we realized, like, by and large, that is the exception to the rule. That is not the case. It's mostly the John Sorbers of this world who ingratiate themselves in a child's life, try to legitimize the contact, and then slowly erode the boundaries, as Lieutenant Clark was explaining earlier. And so we did such a good job educating our community and our juries on, you know, grooming and them understanding that, you know, that's why children often don't report the delays in reporting, the statute of limitations needed to be expanded because of the grooming tactics and the silencing of victims. But now we're in this new age of it is, yes, the person you know. However, for us, for parents, for people who have, you know, children in their lives, the people our children know aren't necessarily known to us. And those people are being invited into our homes and into our children's bedrooms. And that's thanks to social media, to Snap, all of the different features. Yeah. And so it's kind of a combination of this stranger danger and the grooming of the people you know. And we're seeing that the tips that are coming in, the cyber tips, because the laws require internet service providers and media, you know, the various providers to notify if they suspect child abuse. It is shocking the number of tips that come through. And that is why it kind of full circle to have amazing resources. And you have, you know, then Detective Chris Clark, now Lieutenant, second in command in his police department, you know, helping to share his wisdom to the men and women that work under, you know, his command, and to share that combined wisdom throughout our law enforcement community. That's the only way we're going to be able to battle these crimes. Chris,
it is terrifying with the digital age, and now we're all kind of witnessing from afar, unfortunately, the AI aspect of this, where even more damage is being done, and the pressure, the tactic where a lot of the offenders will exploit, you know, children to say, if you don't send me these images, I'm going to publish this, or I'm going to send this to your family and your friends. And a lot of these children, they engage in self-harm, or they commit suicide, or they obviously follow along with the offender. It's just awful, and it is just, like Jen said, it is so prolific. It is it's amazing and incredible that Bucks County leads the state, and I hope other states catch on and really devote the resources and personnel to it, because that is the future, and it is absolutely terrifying.
You mentioned the wisdom. I'm talking with two individuals here who have a lot of resources and thoughts probably about exactly this. And we mentioned it changed so much in the last, you know, probably you mentioned the explosion of AI and social media. If you're a parent out there or a grandparent who has children you look after or take care of, and I'll start with you, Lieutenant Chris Clark. You know, give me maybe three or four things you can think of if you're an individual. I can easily just maybe vet some of these things to. I know you can't watch them every day, every second. There has to be some sort of trust element that you're doing the best you possibly can. But give me a few things that if you're a parent or grandparent listening, can maybe help out. Well,
I know there's safeguards, there's certain programs, there's monitoring, there's those types of things. But I think that, you know, just kind of the basic fundamental thing that is not unique to parents and children of this generation is just good communication with your children. You got to know what's going on in their lives. You don't necessarily need to be their friend, but you got to have a relationship with them where they can talk to you and they can feel comfortable, and you can feel comfortable where they're not portrayed or depicted as prying into their life. But to have that trust, to have that open relationship, to have that attention, because a lot of these kids, unfortunately, they fall prey to this because they are kind of on their own. They're not, you know, don't have that loving connection with their parents and their caregivers. So that, to me, is paramount and really rises to the level of preventative for a lot of these issues that we experience.
Another resource at your office where if there are things happening, children can feel, you know, secure enough to come,
yes.
whether it's Fall Township or, you know,
yes.
whatever it is. Good.
Yes.
That's great. And D.A. Shorn, likewise.
Yeah, just keep the lines of communication open from when they're young. Reinforce that no matter what, you can always tell us anything. You know, don't be afraid of getting in trouble, because what these predators often do is they play upon the fact that they make the child think they're in this together, and that, you know, if anybody knows, we're both going to be in trouble. And then they play, as the child gets older, they play upon the fact that the child fears embarrassment and humiliation. What adolescent age kid isn't embarrassed about everything?
Yes.
And so the, you know, so it silences them. So as a parent, a caregiver, a guardian, anyone who cares for a child, you know, is to keep those lines of communication open, and you need to tell me, and you need to, just sadly, it takes a little bit of their innocence away, because you have to do it at a younger age than we ever feared, because, you know, 10-year-olds are actively on yeah. social media and have phones in their bedrooms. So that, I think that's the key. And I'm a big believer in search those devices. You know, you're obligated. I really
right.
believe it. It's not a betrayal of trust. You know, unfortunately, you might trust your child, but you cannot trust these predators out there who have access unfettered.
Yeah. Lieutenant Clark, I hate to kind of go back to this case, but it kind of, you know, brings it a new light. Do you notice a web of these individuals? Is there like, are they working? Do you notice them having peers? They can kind of, these, whether it's Mr. Sorber or others, and other cases, D.A. Shorn, you talked about, that either they work together or they're kind of tight-knit. Have you noticed that one individual could earmark to three or four other
yes.
individuals?
So, you know, back in the old school John Sorber era, when things were traded, we found this evidence during the search warrant where they would actively mail things to one another through U.S. mail and had that network of people. Now in this digital age, yes, there are online communities, dark web communities that, you know, manufacture, create, share, you know, almost like trade children, you know, or provide that level of communication. It is like peeling an onion back in this digital day. It is not just one independent person viewing. It is sharing. It's communicating. It is procuring, providing. I mean, it runs the gamut. So, yes, they do work in concert.
D.A. Shorn as well. You're seeing that in your office, I assume.
We see it far too often, and it just blows my mind. You know, recently you may have seen news coverage on a case where a very much loved and supported 13-year-old child from Central Bucks was being sexually exploited by a trafficker in Kentucky. And then at least two different men from the Central Bucks region, one in his 40s, one in his 60s, were having sex with this child because she was being exploited by an online
right.
trafficker.
It was the worry of getting exploited.
Yes.
It was pictures of things.
Pictures
yes.
and harming your mom. And it started out believing it was a peer and a boyfriend, and then suddenly, you know, she started to realize she was in too deep. This was not what it, you know, he's not who he purported to be. But that psychological control, it's shocking. And again, that's not a reflection on bad parenting or anything.
No.
That's how determined these abusers
right.
are, and that there's a network is just, yeah, we see it all too often.
And in that case, I believe the victim eventually did come to her mother,
and
how
did.
Scary that is
yes.
as a 13 or 14-year-old. But, you know, this sort of heroic stance it takes for who knows how many other victims, as you mentioned, Lieutenant, such a web of not only predators but victims as well.
You know, what, Matt, just to be really specific, because I want to give credit where credit mm-hmm. is due, it was the mother watching a prior news conference where we arrested a Pendel sex trafficker, meaning a resident of Pendel who was sex trafficking children, and she feared her daughter because she saw some of the things that you heard Chris Clark warn, you know, parents about, and she saw some unusual activity. So she feared her daughter was being trafficked, and that's what started her looking into the phone and then communicating with her daughter, and then her daughter having the courage to divulge. And so it was like this beautiful thing of, you know, trust but unfortunately, I mean, so many crimes already unfolded, but I got to give credit to both the mother and the daughter in this case, the victim in this case, and I'm confident justice will be served. But, you know, it's just devastating to hear those reports.
Well, we want to give confidence and kudos as well. This case we talked about for the last hour to Lieutenant Clark and D.A. Shorn. I know you mentioned a couple of times that, wow, I can't believe we remember all these things. And it's the commitment level for all parties, I think, that really hits to you, you know, D.A. Shorn, is to see that from local local law enforcement or prosecutors or other counties. And you mentioned, Lieutenant Clark, to go to Chester County in a non-digital age and bang on neighbors' doors and not know detectives or a police department up there, and then go to Adams County and Gettysburg. It's a lot of moving pieces to get these individuals off the streets. And I commend both of you, and I know, D.A. Shore, you feel the same way about Lieutenant Clark.
Thank you, Matt. I really appreciate it. Yeah, nothing short of, you know, pure commitment to the job and heroic in his efforts to save that second child.
So. No, we can't thank both of you enough for your mark in an hour here on 1490 WBCB. Lieutenant Chris Clark from Falls Township, your DA in Bucks County, Jen Shorn here. Monthly, we will be here talking about the DA's office, some of the trends they see, some old stories and cases they have done. I know they want to make sure that you, the Bucks County residents and business owners, are aware of what's going on across the county. And DA Shorn, I'll kind of let you wrap it up. Anything else you want to hit on before we head out this month?
No. Just the only other thing that Joe asked me to mention was this this incident in Quakertown involving a counselor who, one of the worst betrayals of trust and such an intrusive violation of people's privacies, having committed these illegal recordings of 21 victims when they were seeking out counseling, a therapist to provide counseling to these victims, and he was exploiting them in the worst way imaginable. I'm proud of the work that was done by my office and all members of law enforcement and my colleague, Kristen McElroy, who will be prosecuting the case. But we look forward to getting justice for those 21 victims.
Well, we appreciate the justice for all here on 1490 WBCB. So for Matt Miro, for Lieutenant Chris Clark, and DA Jen Shorn, signing off, saying we'll see you next month. Take care.